Welcome to the ABHA Listen and Learn Podcast, where we discuss the latest issues related to hearing and balance healthcare. And now, here are your hosts, Dr. Dana Day and Dr. Susan Schmidt.
Hello, I'm Dr. Dana Day.
And I am Dr. Susan Schmidt, and welcome to ABHA Listen and Learn Podcast, hosted by Arizona Balance and Hearing. This is where we discuss all the latest and greatest advances in testing and treatment of all hearing and balance issues.
As one of our core values, and one Dr. Schmidt and I take very seriously, that is the education of both ourselves and mostly our patients, that is why we are here today.
And to that end, if anyone who is listening has any specific questions you would like answered on this podcast, please go to questions@arizonabalance.com. Arizona Balance is spelled out, so questions@arizonabalance.com. And we will be sure to answer them in one of our upcoming podcasts. Also, don't forget to click subscribe so you don't miss any of our future episodes. So, as we get into this episode, we've discussed so many topics in our previous episodes of ABHA Listen and Learn. We've talked about tinnitus, hearing loss, balance disorders, dizziness, and we've talked about specific therapies for many of these issues. So I feel like there's just so much research out there for both the evaluations that we do and the area of rehabilitation of our patients. So, you know, sometimes I just find it so hard to keep up with it all. And, you know, this is our specialty. So I can't imagine all of you out there that don't, you know, are not directly involved in this specialty to keep up with all the latest trends and research.
Yes, I totally agree. It seems like every day somebody is sending me a link, or I'm seeing an article, or I'm trying to get online to do continuing education. And everything is just moving at just light speed these days. And it's kind of hard to keep up. It's kind of nice in our practice because we all kind of specialize in different areas. You, tinnitus, for example. So I can rely on you to keep me up on the newest and greatest in tinnitus. But, boy, this other stuff, it's really hard.
It is. And even some of our patients come in and they're doing their own research.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
So they were like, oh, I Googled this the other day. And I'm like, I have no idea what you're talking about.
Exactly.
So the internet is a great thing sometimes, and sometimes it can lead you astray. But you know, with all the research out there, and it is out there for everybody to find, It's great that we have all that information, but at the same time to take in it everything and, you know, look at it and see what is applicable and what is not, that's, I think, difficult.
Yes, I agree. Because you're right, because they'll come in and they'll say, well, this is what I read, or this is what I said, or they'll come in diagnosing themselves, or if I do this or that, will my ringing go away, or... And it's part of you wants to say, stay off the internet. but it's interesting. We're in an age now of just so much information at our fingertips. I'm not always sure that's a good thing. Maybe it'd be better if we could just sit back and kind of just go back to our roots of learning. So, in fact, even to that, you and I are going to, we do a lot of continuing education. I have one coming up that I think is really important on the risk of developing dementia if you have a hearing loss. So I find that it's really important, so I'm going to take the time to do that continuing education. But I could literally be doing continuing education every day.
If
I couldn't pick and choose what I feel is important for my personal and professional development.
Exactly. Yeah. So it's just, You know, all of you out there, just like I do this, you know, when I have an issue, I Google it and I try to figure out, you know, what's the best solution to this, when it might be easier just to go to a professional and yes. just ask them, what do you think?
Right.
what direction should I go?
Yeah.
So that's why we're here. We're trying to, you know, give you all the latest and the greatest information out there, telling you, okay, here, is this a viable option? You know, here's the research behind it. Is this an option? Here's the research behind it, so that we can all be educated together.
Absolutely. And to that end, today we are so fortunate to have Dr. Keith Darrow with us. Dr. Darrow is an MIT and Harvard Medical School trained neuroscientist and a clinical audiologist. He is a former clinical professor at Northeastern University and is currently a tenured professor at Worcester State University. And I think I just messed up Worcester. Sorry, Dr. Darrow. Dr. Darrow's clinical experience is vast and includes a clinical fellowship at the Department of Otolaryngology at Brigham and Women's Hospital, and he is co-founder of the Hearing and Brain Centers of America. Dr. Darrow has chosen to lead the Excellence in Audiology movement across the country to improve the lives of 42 million people living with untreated hearing loss and tinnitus. His Amazon.com best-selling book, Stop Living in Isolation, has been read by tens of thousands of patients across the country and is heralded as the most informative research in hearing healthcare. Dr. Darrow is nationally recognized speaker, trainer, and researcher, and has been conducting research at the Massachusetts Eye and Ear Infirmary for over 15 years. His publications and research has been cited over 900 times. Welcome, Dr. Darrow, and thank you for coming onto our podcast to talk about the medical treatment of hearing loss and why it is so important.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me on here today. I speak for everybody in central Massachusetts who is offended by your misstatement. It is Worcester State, W-U-S-T-A-H.
It's so hard to remember that.
It happens everywhere. As soon as you walk outside of Massachusetts, nobody gets it right. So no worries whatsoever. I'm used to it.
Okay. Well, thank you. And thank you for that grace and mercy that you offered me there. So if my memory serves me correctly, and that's not always the best thing, I met you approximately 4 years ago for the first time when I heard you talk in Boston.
That sounds about right. Yes. Yeah. Yes. I know we've all met a lot of people along the way, but 4 years definitely sounds about right. And that is sort of when our journey began, as we sort of embarked together on how do we create a community of like-minded, best practices hearing professionals, right? There's a lot of hearing professionals out there, and they range from not only their degree, they range from the services they provide, the practices they provide, the treatment that they provide. But it's been really a great ride working with you, working with Dr. Susan, working with your entire team as we have grown to advance the medical treatment of hearing loss in Phoenix and beyond.
Yes. And in all of your talks, you begin with your mission. And can you just, for our listeners, explain what your mission is and why it is so important to you?
Look, my mission centers around the fact that there are 42 million people living with untreated hearing loss. Mm-hmm. I think all of us, it's pretty safe to say, all of us have some experience when it comes to hearing loss. And what I mean by that is it could be a brother, it could be a child, it could be a grandparent, a parent. Everybody knows somebody. It's almost impossible to not know somebody, given that anywhere from 10 to 20% of the population suffers with hearing loss. And unfortunately, living with hearing loss is often considered an option for many, many people, mm-hmm. not understanding exactly what it means, A, to get treatment. So what does that mean? What does that look like? That's awfully confusing for a lot of patients. And the other, the real detrimental confusion is, well, what's the big deal if I don't do anything about it, right? This is quote unquote normal for my age. And so my mission mm-hmm. has always been to educate more of the 42 million people living with untreated hearing loss, to try to touch more of the millions living with undertreated hearing loss, and to help spread the word about what is really the third most common chronic medical condition affecting older adults in our country. It's a big deal.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it is.
Yes. So we're going to talk about today with you, Dr. Darrow, the link between dementia and untreated hearing loss. So how long has the link of hearing loss and dementia been studied for?
That's a great question. Mm-hmm. We're actually coming up on a anniversary. We are getting fairly close to the 10-year anniversary of when the first article came out. And actually, I wonder if I missed the celebration now that I think about my dates. But we are about 10 years in for the first article that came out that said, look, hearing loss and cognitive decline and dementia are absolutely correlated to each other. And what's really ironic is the study that was done at Johns Hopkins was not a hearing study. It was not a brain power study. It was a study of aging. They looked at thousands upon thousands of people as they aged, and they tracked them for so many years. And, you know, I always tell people they looked at everything from balding to toenails and sort of everything in between. And one of the many findings, I mean, they came out with a lot of great data. They taught us a lot about how humans, about how the Homo sapien ages. But one of the most headline catching findings, I mean, Today Show, PBS ran a full 1-hour documentary. I mean, you name it, every news outlet talked about it, about how hearing loss is linked to cognitive decline and dementia, and how your degree of hearing loss, whether that be even the quote unquote mildest of cases, can increase that risk as much as 200%. For those who have a more moderate to profound hearing loss, it's upwards of a 500% increased risk. So yeah, we're at about 10 years now. Now look, I think I'm pretty sure you guys feel this way too. If you ask an audiologist or anybody who works in hearing healthcare, they knew it, right? I think we all knew it in our gut before the research came out, because we saw it in our offices. We saw that mm-hmm. for some reason, the patients we're seeing seem to have more issues with memory. Mm-hmm. They seem to have more family members that complain about memory loss, about confusion. I know personally with my grandmother, I watched, and this was in the 90s, but I watched as my grandmother rapidly declined, and there was this strong correlation or observation, I should really call it, of as the hearing got worse, so too did her memory function. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I think a lot of us knew it for a long time, but now the data really is out there and is really not up for debate, as I sort of think of it.
Right. It's interesting that it started 10 years ago, because it's just recently, I think, that my patients are actually coming to me and they have read articles or seen something that does link dementia and hearing loss. And mm-hmm. so that's just recently, just in, you know, the patients that I've been seeing. So it's...
Well, yeah, I think our society as a whole, I mean, we're only, what, 30 plus 35 years out from the Americans with Disability Act. Mm-hmm. And so what that did was that actually shined a light on all these different disabilities. Hearing was one of them. You know, prior to that, people with hearing loss, especially, you know, children, they were kind of pushed to the side. They were almost, you know, forgotten about. They were put in their own category, went to their own schools. They were different. Mm-hmm. I think that as our society evolves. And now for our older adults, you know, my mother, I always tell this story. My mother is in her mid-70s. She wears jeans. She's out there in her UGG. She has a great life. She's always going out to dinner. She has a way better social life than I do. But I think just a generation before that, my grandmother was in a house dress and never left the house. Mm-hmm. So things are different. So I think we're focusing more and more on what we call active aging. And so now that people want to, you know, we don't want to retire and die. We want to retire and have a blast. And then die. I mean, that has to happen at some point. And so those in between years, people want to make the most of them. And so they're learning, how do I make the most out of life? How do I avoid cognitive decline and dementia? I don't want what happened to my mother, grandmother, or sister, or brother. I don't want that to happen to me. And so, yeah, a lot of people are talking about it more now than ever.
Mm-hmm. So, one of the things I love about listening to you is you can put everything into simple terms. So simply for our listeners, what is the relationship between hearing loss and dementia?
Well, the simplest way to explain it, and there isn't just one, there's not one straight line from hearing loss to dementia. Mm-hmm. There's at least three. And how those three lines interact with each other, we don't completely understand. But one of the major contributors is definitely social isolation. And I say that as we are hopefully emerging from a pandemic where social isolation was essentially thrown upon us. It was forced upon us mm-hmm. for the better good. So I'm not trying to get political, but it was forced upon us. And so social isolation, not interacting with others, not being able to communicate, not being able to interact is a known risk factor for developing dementia. We have known for hundreds of years that social isolation comes with hearing loss. We tend to do less physically, socially. And so that's an obvious link there. People with hearing loss do less socially, therefore increases their risk of cognitive decline and dementia. So that's one of the lines. Mm-hmm. The other line is as the nerves break down that connect the ear to brain, there's actually a shrinkage of the brain. You know, in the lab, at the hospital, we call it cerebral atrophy. Mm-hmm. But as the nerves die, the brain starts to get smaller. And some data out there indicates that people with hearing loss, their brains can shrink as much as 30 to 40%. Now, if you've ever seen a brain with dementia or Alzheimer's, it's like the size of a softball, right? Mm-hmm. Compared to like a big volleyball, which is what our brain should look like. So it shrinks down. So right there is another connection. Hearing loss leads to cerebral atrophy, which is linked to cognitive decline and dementia. And finally, what we call cognitive overload. So for anybody listening, you know, if you've been to a restaurant and you're out with friends and family and somebody says something to you, if you're a few seconds behind because you're trying to fill in the missing pieces or, you know, maybe the punchline went off, everybody laughs and it takes you a few seconds, that's your brain working on overdrive. It's not meant to be that hard. Hearing is a natural, effortless process until we lose it. And so that cognitive overload is taxing the brain. And my simple analogy has always been, it's like driving 60 miles an hour in second gear. You are literally wearing down the gears of your brain and just repeatedly damaging it, which can lead to cognitive decline and dementia. Again, those are three separate paths. How they all intertwine with each other is not completely understood, but that is how we believe hearing loss can then result in cognitive decline, or I should say, increase the risk of cognitive decline and dementia.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. Those are three important factors that we should all think about mm-hmm. as we move forward, how they relate to each other, and what effects that's going to have in our lives in the future.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah.
So if somebody comes in to our office and they have hearing loss, versus if they have hearing loss with a history of dementia, is there a difference in that risk factor for getting dementia, do you think?
So, you know, here's what we know, and hopefully I'm answering the question as you intended. So we now understand that treating hearing loss can improve cognitive function. And there have been a few studies out now showing that memory recall is improved for those who treat their hearing loss. Response time is quicker for people who treat their hearing loss. Attention span is longer for people who treat their hearing loss. Cognitive overload, which I just talked about, is less in people who treat their hearing loss. Mm-hmm. So to say that treating hearing loss will completely eradicate your risk, I mean, everybody has a natural risk for developing cognitive decline. Mm-hmm. The question to me is, are we doing everything possible to help prevent it or at least delay it? Because some research tells us that treating hearing loss can delay the onset of dementia or cognitive decline. So is that kind of what you were getting at, Dr. Day?
Yes.
Actually, that was Dr. Schmidt, but
that's okay.
Oh, okay. The voices sound a little similar. Okay.
So we just talked about treating hearing loss. So how effective is it in treating hearing loss and decreasing the risk of dementia? And can the treatment be as simple as just an over-the-counter amplifier?
The answer is a resounding yes to the first part and a resounding no to the second part. So allow me to dive in on this. So There is a worldwide organization. It's called the European Commission on Dementia. They've been around for a number of years. Their first report came out in 2017. They updated it in 2020, and they continue as they collect data to update. I think of it as the holy grail of everything we need to know about dementia diagnosis, treatment, care, and to me, the biggest thing is prevention. Mm-hmm. Now,
absolutely.
Their list, they're up to 12 known risk factors that increase the risk of dementia. And actually, the way they phrase it is, if you adjust these risk factors, they're called modifiable risk factors. Mm-hmm. If you modify them for the better, you will significantly decrease your risk of dementia. It's believed up to 40% of cases of dementia are considered preventable if you just do these 12 things. Now, some of them are really, you know, sort of obvious. Like if you have obesity, you should lose weight. If you're smoking, you should stop smoking. So some of them are obvious, and they're ways that we know better that we should take care of ourselves. What's not obvious is that number one on their list, and this is the one that really, I think, took everybody by surprise. The most modifiable factor to help prevent dementia is treating hearing loss. I mean, you take that in. Like, I'm going to say it again because it's that big of a deal.
Yeah.
The most important thing you can do to reduce your risk of cognitive decline and dementia is treat your hearing loss. I mean, that's a real powerful statement for this worldwide organization to come out. And they stress the importance of early treatment. So hopefully that answers the first part of the question. The second part of the question was, so by treating hearing loss, if I want to reduce my risk of dementia, can I just go to CVS or Best Buy or Amazon or a big box store and just buy a hearing aid, stick it in my ears, and bam, I'm all better, my risk is down, and I can go about life? No, absolutely not. So a widget is a widget. I mean, think about your iPhone, right? And the way I think about it is, the way I use my phone compared to the way my mother uses her phone. Right. Mm-hmm. My mom does a couple of text messages, and she just figured out how to send pictures in her text messages. OK, that's about it. I use my phone for everything. And because of that, it has simplified my life. So technology is technology. It's how you use it. It's the service that's provided. So for example, and I know you know this, but when you get an over-the-counter device, you stick it in your ear. It doesn't do much unless there is a licensed and certified professional who can actually program the hearing aids according to your A, hearing loss, according to your B, tinnitus, and C, according to your cognitive deficits. So all three of those go into how the technology stimulates your brain. See, over-the-counter devices, they essentially make things louder, which if you have hearing loss, that doesn't help. People with hearing loss don't say, shout at me. They say, can you speak more clearly? Mm-hmm. Gosh, I wish I could reduce the background noise. So when you undergo the medical treatment of hearing loss, yes, there is a piece of technology involved. But what matters the most is how you're diagnosed, what your results mean, and how the technology is custom prescribed to your hearing loss, tinnitus, and cognitive deficit. So does that, you think that sort of gets at the answer there?
Yes, it does. Thank you.
And look, it's a very, I understand. I talk to a lot of patients, and I think the biggest message I get is, I'm confused. I don't know if I should go to the audiologist. I don't know if I should buy this thing in CVS. I just don't know. And so there's this paralysis by analysis, right? Mm-hmm. And so they end up doing nothing,
right?
Which is not good, mm-hmm. right? So I tell everybody, get your first hearing test at 50, find a good hearing healthcare professional, because chances are, as you age, you will have hearing loss. It's embedded in our genes. But you can't rely on just purchasing some widget. It's not going to provide you what you need. And look, there's a reason over 15 states have already, the attorney generals have already started to sue and slap big lawsuits on these over-the-counter hearing aids that are making some lavish claims about what they mm-hmm. can and can't do. So it's going to be an interesting couple of years. Mm-hmm. And I unfortunately think it will create more confusion for our patients. But look, a podcast like this is a great way to get out information to help clear things up.
Yes. Thank you. So one of the first times that you and I spoke, I remember you saying to me, because I was in the camp of, gosh, we do hearing and balance. And so when we test balance, we do everything under the sun we can do to get a good diagnosis and treatment for that patient. And it costs more for that patient to come see us. And yet we were okay with putting something on someone just to have something. And I never could understand that. And I loved your analogy about if you went to a heart surgeon and you needed a valve in your heart. And I don't know if you remember that, but I'll go ahead and let you say what you said to me that kind of went, oh, yeah. Yeah, why aren't we looking at this as seriously as a heart condition?
Well, I think one of the great things about medicine as it's evolved over the last few decades is it becomes more and more specialized, mm-hmm. which is great. But the downside to that, the con to that, is things get put into their own buckets. Like, oh, there's hearing loss, there's tinnitus, there's balance issues, there's cognitive decline, and I need to see four different specialists, mm-hmm. which maybe you do, but treatment plans should be all-encompassing, knowing that hearing loss, tinnitus, balance, cognitive issues all come together. And when you address one, so for example, treating hearing loss the best way possible can significantly reduce the risk of falls mm-hmm. and help you with your balance and help you with your cognitive issues. So you know, I often go with the, we were taught this in preschool, right? You know, the left foot's connected to the left, but you know, it's like everything is interconnected in our bodies. And sometimes we lose sight of that. And we think of things as these separate units that don't necessarily interact, and they definitely do. And so my analogy was, and I think it does in a way relate to what you mentioned about the over-the-counter hearing aids, is that sure, if you go to a heart surgeon, imagine them offering you a new valve that will pump, you know, say 35% maximum capacity. You know, you'll get about 35% of what you need, and it'll cost X amount. So you could save a few bucks. Or here's another valve, which can get you about 55, 60% of the oxygen and blood flow that you need, and it costs a little bit more. And then here's our Cadillac, which will get you maximum oxygenation. Like, could you imagine a heart surgeon ever saying that to you? No, absolutely not. Right. They're going to provide you with the best care that you need. They are going to make the strong medical recommendation that will allow you, your heart, to pump its best so that you can live your best life, hear your best, think your best, feel your best. So, I mean, that analogy, I think, works all the time.
Yeah. No, it really made a very much an impact and on me. And that is why at ABHA now we only use the Cadillacs, if you will, because
I don't even see it as the Cadillac. And the reason being,
yes,
look, I don't know what you drive, but I don't drive a Cadillac. Right?
I don't either.
So the Cadillac, the car is the widget. It's just this product. It's something that, yeah, there's a sales guy involved and it's got bells and whistles. And for a long time, people thought, well, if I'm more active, I need a better hearing aid. And if I'm less active, no, it's not about that. It's about what does your brain need? And so you're part of the network. This is why we've developed an Excellence in Audiology network, where we have nationwide providers that will only subscribe to not only the highest level of diagnostic services, so that we can, you know, look under every rock, we can determine exactly why you have hearing loss, how it came about, and what to do next. And in addition to a great diagnostic protocol, we have a treatment program that's designed with hearing, tinnitus, and cognitive needs in mind. And really, we'll get you the best technology that you need. And it's not going to be, you know, based on price. It's going to be, what is it you need? And look, if there's a financial issue, we will look at, how do we work with your insurance? How do we work with our nonprofit organization? How do we get it so you get the absolute best care?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Is there a way to assess cognitive function before receiving hearing technology and then after wearing hearing technology to look to see if there's been an improvement in cognition?
Yeah, that's a great question. So there have been some, sort of roundabout, maybe not that indirect, that would be the best word. There have been some indirect measures of cognitive function that have been lurking around hearing healthcare for a while. Thankfully, there is now a diagnostic screening tool that is approved by the FDA for assessing your risk of cognitive decline. So this is called CogniVue Thrive. I got my hands on this, like, it was barely off of the production line years ago, when the research was just coming out showing that finally there was a computer-based test that almost anybody can use, almost any diagnostician can use. It's really simple, takes 5 minutes, and it gives us a great understanding of where our patient's cognitive function is at today. It helps indicate, is it good? You know, is it okay? Is it bad? It helps give us some insight as to how the brain is working. Everything from reaction time, processing speed, memory recall, and there's a few more tests in there. But this CogniVue, and I believe in the Phoenix area, you are hands down the only clinic, the only practice that would even consider using something like this, because you think so far beyond just hearing. You think about hearing, balance, tinnitus, the brain. And so this is a phenomenal tool that your clinic has incorporated, that many of the excellence in audiology practices have incorporated. And we're learning more and more each day, and some new data coming out showing that people who treat their hearing loss, their cognitive scores, if you will, increase when they treat their hearing loss, and they stay increased for, you know, long term. So there's a lot of great data out there, and kudos to you for also being an early adopter of this process.
Thank you. And it's interesting for our listeners who may not have heard one of our previous episodes. We talked with Jill Davis, who is also an adopter of CogniVue, and she brought up a really good point. In all of the cognitive screens prior to CogniVue, were all verbal.
Yeah.
So you're sitting across someone who probably has a hearing loss, and you're giving them a verbal cognitive screen.
There's so many things that could go wrong there. Well, some were verbal. Some were like we used to have this pretty simple 15 question assessment. But even that, these were just so, they were indirect. They were circumstantial. You know, there's the famous, can you draw a clock? There's some of these mini mental states, you know, but we finally have something that's objective. We finally have a test that I would, you know, liken to an MRI image, right? Like you're getting hard, concrete data out of this test, not circumstantial. You're not wondering, did the person hear me when I gave them the verbal instruction? So it's really, it's the right thing to do. And I'm really excited that hearing healthcare, many of us have really realized, well, wait, if we tell our patients that hearing goes way beyond the ears and affects cognitive function, we should be testing that in our practices. And so I'm excited that you are, we have been for years, and it's a great service that you provide to the communities in Phoenix.
Thank you.
Yes. And as far as the patients, so somebody comes in and they are fit with treatment technology to hopefully decrease their tinnitus, increase their social interaction, things like that. Is there a way that they, just in their normal everyday lives, is there a way that they can tell that they are actually improving on these aspects of their life?
So a couple of things, and not every patient is going to do it, but I often talk to my patients about how, you know, I'll ask them, how do you feel about a journal? How do you feel about keeping note of some of your experiences? Mm-hmm. For a number of reasons. One, I want you, the patient, to know the difference between yesterday and today when we start treatment. Two, I want to know, like, firsthand, what are some of your experiences? And if you write them down shortly after you experience it, it'll be more clear in your mind. And then I can adjust the prescription accordingly. So I ask a lot of my patients, again, some of them will do it. Some of them say, oh, no, that's not for me. I often find our patients, we do such a good job, and I'm not trying to pat us on the back or pat you guys on the back here, but we do such a great job that patients sometimes instantly go back to feeling normal. They go back to interacting again, and they almost don't even realize how much better life is today than it was even a month or two ago. A lot of times it's the family members who will come and say, oh my gosh, it is so great to have him back. We're out at dinner. We're out having a great time. You know, and sometimes that skeptic patient will say, oh yeah, no, but I don't know if it's the hearing aids. I don't know if it's this process. It absolutely is. Being able to help people hear better is really one of the best forms of brain training, getting the brain alive again, vibrant and active. And our patients are able to just fairly seamlessly jump right back into life. And like I said, sometimes I don't know if we get enough credit for it, but that's okay, because it's not about that. It's about the patient living their best life.
Mm-hmm. Great. Well, that is some great information. We really appreciate it and your time today. We're going to have you hold tight. We're going to go into our next segment, and that is tips and tricks. Susan?
Yes. So here is a tip for you out there. We're talking about treatment technology. And so as far as receiving that treatment technology, there is, you know, when the sound goes through that technology and reaches the inner part of the ear, it does have to go through various parts to get there. So we want to actually ensure that everybody is receiving the benefit of the treatment technology to hopefully, ideally, meet the needs of the brain. When you do get fit with treatment technology, there is a special test that we do shortly after we fit you, okay? This test is called real ear verification, okay? Very important as audiologists, as we, you know, have done this for years. So we know that when we program this technology to meet the needs of the brain, what we see on the screen is not always perfect as to how the sound is being transferred to the brain. So we can create this kind of snapshot of how the sound is getting through to each individual, and that's called real ear testing. So after you do get fitted with this treatment technology, we do a special test. We make sure that the sound is actually getting to where it needs to go in the proper channels, in the proper frequencies. And that usually, when we make that when we do that test, it makes a huge difference in the perception of the individual that's wearing the treatment technology. So they were doing well before, and then we do this test, make some fine tuning, and all of a sudden they're like, oh yeah, okay, yeah, everything is a little clearer now. There is a little difference there. So that test is really important, and I know that information is out there too, because I just had somebody ask me about it the other day. What is that test that you do right after you get fit? So very important. So make sure after you get fit with this technology that your audiologist does perform this test, just to verify that the sound going in is actually the sound that we want to go in.
Great. Wonderful information. So next segment is our question and answer, and I'm going to ask Dr. Darrow to answer this question. Why is hearing technology so expensive?
So that's a great question, and we all get it all the time. So there's a couple of ways to look at it. The hearing technology itself has a hard value. A manufacturer makes it, they sell it for a certain amount, and therefore there's a certain large cost that's involved. There are years and years of research and development. Many of these good companies will devote a healthy portion of their own budget to research and development. But again, that's still boring to the patient or to the customer. Mm-hmm. What it really boils down to is service. If you are ever offered hearing aids on their own, come in, pick them up, go hear your best, 3, 4, 5, 6, 10,000, whatever it costs, no, absolutely not. You must turn and run the other way as fast as possible. When it comes to treating hearing loss, there is not only the diagnostic process that happens in the beginning, everything from the cognitive assessment to establishing degree of hearing loss, looking for middle ear infections. I mean, we must basically look under every rock to figure out what's wrong. There's then a significant number of hours and a number of appointments that go into that custom prescription process, including the long-term care. Right. So everything from warranties to follow-up appointments to future testing. With our programs, and I know that you've adopted these membership programs that allow patients access to hearing health care for a low monthly payment. And so, yes, some of the upfront costs can be very expensive, but my practices, your practices in the Phoenix area have opened up more access and affordability by making a simple, low-cost process, but it's also all-inclusive. It's kind of like a great subscription plan that allows you great access.
Thank you. And so finally, one more question for you, Dr. Darrell. On sure. our episodes, we always ask our guests to tell us what they are listening to these days. What are you listening to these days?
You mean in terms of podcasts or?
Anything you want to tell us, podcasts, music.
So I'm much more of a music person than I am a podcast person.
Okay.
I love being on them, and I get to listen to some of the TED Talks every now and then. I've listened to some of yours. Honestly, what I'm most excited about is getting back to live music.
Oh,
so okay. that's always been my wife and I from early on in our relationship. I mean, we've been at it for 15 years, three kids, so things have changed now. But live music has always been something that I have enjoyed, something that my wife has enjoyed. And so we're excited to get back into that. So I've been listening to, now that people are back out on the road, a personal favorite of mine is Dave Matthews and his band. And we have been listening to a lot of the live concerts, looking forward to going to our own show coming up in the next month or so.
Great. Awesome. Wonderful.
Great question.
Okay. So I would like to thank Dr. Darrell and all of you for joining us again today. And if you have any questions for any of us at ABHA, please post them on our Facebook page or email us at questions@arizonabalance.com. That is questions@arizonabalance.com. Also, don't forget to hit subscribe, as we are always talking about different topics and you don't want to miss any of our future episodes.
And for a free copy of Dr. Day's book, Reengage with Life and Family, just go visit our website at azbalanceandhearing.com. So that's azbalanceandhearing.com, and click the box requesting a free copy. Or you can call our office at 602-265-9000, and you can request a free copy that way as well. Just let one of our exceptional staff know that you heard it on our podcast.
Remember, hearing care is health care, and treating your hearing loss is the number one modifiable risk factor for reducing your risk of developing dementia. Treating your hearing loss has also been shown to reduce your risk of falls, decrease the experience of tinnitus, increase your social engagement, and decrease depression. Don't put it off any longer. I'd like to thank Robin, our producer, for joining us today. Also, Dave Pratt's Star Worldwide Networks for hosting us in this lovely location. And I want to mostly thank you, our listeners, for joining us today. ABHA, partnering with you to better balance,
better hearing,
better life.
Thank you for listening to the ABHA Listen and Learn podcast with Dr. Dana Day and Dr. Susan Schmidt. Join us next time as we discuss the latest issues related to hearing and balance healthcare. Plus, hear any of our past episodes on demand 24/7 on StarWorldwideNetworks.com or wherever you get your favorite podcasts.